following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's Friday. Yes, we made it to a Friday, so we've got that going for us. And over in London, they're saying upwards of 200,000 to 300,000 people taking to the streets to protest dump. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you to our friends across the pond. We're in this together. I am Nicole Sandler. It's been a hell of a week. And it wraps up today with more breaking news. So I don't have anything funny to share with you to start things off today. Things are getting serious, and I've got a lot of an extended what's news for you. So why don't we just launch into it now, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, there was breaking news not too long ago, like an hour ago, perhaps. Special counsel Robert Mueller indicted 12 Russians today and accused them of hacking into the Democratic National Committee and the DCCC to sabotage the 2016 presidential election. The indictments were announced in a press conference by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Yes, he's still there. And they come just days before a scheduled Monday summit in Helsinki between Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Lots of people are calling now for this meeting to be canceled. It should be canceled. But more on that in a few minutes. These indictments are the latest charges in a probe that has already netted guilty pleas from three former Donald Trump campaign aides, while the president himself remains under investigation by Mueller for potential obstruction of justice and more. Rosenstein said the Russians stole and released Democratic documents after planting malicious computer codes in the network of the DNC as well as the DCCC. He said Russia's GRU military service was behind online entities that disseminated and promoted the documents under the names Guccifer 2.0, you remember that one, yeah, Roger Stone's pal, and DC Leaks. The indictment dramatically shifts the context for Trump's upcoming meeting with Putin, whom U.S. intelligence services has concluded was behind the 2016 election interference scheme, whose goal was to elect Trump. Now, to make it even better, Ken Delanian of NBC tweeted that he notes the indictment alleges that Russia, on or about July 27th, 2016, started trying to access Clinton's personal emails. You know what else happened that day? This.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
Yep.
I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens. That'll be next.
Do you have any qualms about asking a foreign government, Russia, China, anybody, to interfere, to hack into a system of anybody's in this country?
It's up to the president. Let the president talk to him. Look, here's the problem.
No, no, you just called me a moment ago, Mr. Trump. You said the Russians... You said I welcome them to find those 30,000 emails.
Well, they probably have them. I'd like to have them released.
Yeah, so that happened that day, July 27th, 2016. That's the same day that the Russians, according to this indictment, started trying to access Clinton's personal emails. Sounds like collusion to me. Come on, Mueller. Come on, Mueller. Now, Trump knew that this indictment was coming. He was briefed earlier this week by Rod Rosenstein. So today, and we're going to get to this in a few minutes, there was a press conference at Checkers, I guess was the name of the castle they were at, outside of London. Of course, Trump couldn't be in London because he didn't want to see all the protesters. The baby blimp was quite apropos. Anyway, so but he did have a press conference with Theresa May, and he was asked what he's going to talk to Putin about. And he did say that he'd bring up the election meddling. Yeah, sure.
We'll be talking to President Putin about a number of things. Ukraine. We'll be talking about Syria.
Sure you will.
We'll be talking about other parts of the Middle East. I will be talking about nuclear proliferation.
Okay.
Because we are massively, you know what we've been doing. We've been modernizing and fixing and buying, and it's just a devastating technology. And they likewise are doing a lot. And it's a very, very bad policy. We have no choice, but we are massively big, and they are very big.
What?
And I'll be talking about nuclear proliferation. That would be a great thing if we could do. Now, it's not only us. It's not only Russia and the United States. It's other countries also. But we're the two leaders. We would be the leader. They would be second. I guess China would be third. I think we'll all be talking about that. To me, Jonathan, I think that would be a tremendous achievement if we could do something on nuclear proliferation. And we'll be talking about other things. I know you'll ask, will we be talking about meddling?
Yeah.
And I will absolutely bring that up.
Sure you will.
I don't think you'll have any, I did it, you got me. There won't be a Perry Mason here, I don't think, but you never know what happens, right? But I will absolutely, firmly ask the question.
We'll
have a very good relationship with Russia. I think having and the prime minister would agree. If we have a good relationship with Russia and with China and with other countries, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. So hopefully that will happen, Jonathan.
God, it's word salad. I promise I've got so much sound to play for you today. I promise not to overload you on the Trump stuff because I know it hurts my brain, too. But some of the things he said were just absurd, completely absurd. So we'll share a couple of those clips, and then we'll get to yesterday's hearing with Peter Strzok, who was, frankly, brilliant, quite brilliant. I think he needs to come back on our TV. But anyway, Donald Trump is now in the UK. He attended a gala dinner last night and apparently mended fences with Prime Minister Theresa May after his interview with Rupert Murdoch's Sun newspaper was published last night. While they're at this dinner, the paper, the story with the Sun drops, in which he said her soft Brexit proposal would probably kill any trade deal with the United States. This is a clip from that Sun interview. He went on, he called it fake news. But the whole thing was recorded. So, I guess he just has to hope that his base, his fans, are, they just listen to what he says rather than listen to what he said. But the Sun interview is online.
I would have done it much differently. I actually told Theresa May how to do it, but she didn't agree with
it.
She didn't listen to me.
What did she say?
She didn't listen. No, I told her how to do it. That will be up to her to say. But I told her how to do it. She wanted to go a different route.
Mm. So you would be prepared to walk away if they didn't give you the right terms?
Oh, absolutely. I think what's going on is very unfortunate. I did give Theresa, who I like, I did give her my views on what she should do and how she should negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't follow those views. I would actually say she probably went the opposite
way. I wouldn't follow your advice either.
I think the deal that she's striking is not what the people voted on.
Oh,
it's a much different deal than the people voted on. It was not the deal that was in the referendum. I know they have a lot of resignations, so a lot of people don't like it. No, but it'll definitely affect trade with the United States, unfortunately, in a negative way.
So this is what he says to the Sun The Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid paper over there in London, bad-mouthing Theresa May, saying she's doing it all wrong. She didn't listen to my advice like he knows anything. Ridiculous. But then this morning at the press conference, he was singing a completely different tune.
I also want to thank Prime Minister May for pursuing fair and reciprocal trade with the United States. Once the Brexit process is concluded and perhaps the UK has left the EU, I don't know what they're going to do, but whatever you do is okay with me. That's your decision. Whatever you're going to do is okay with us. Just make sure we can trade together. That's all that matters. The United States looks forward to finalizing a great bilateral trade agreement with the United Kingdom. This is an incredible opportunity for our two countries, and we will seize it fully.
He goes into a situation, he makes it measurably worse. I mean, he did it at NATO. He did it with Theresa May. Bad-mouthed her in this interview. Said Boris Johnson, her opponent, her political opponent, would make a great prime minister. And then I guess he kissed up to her at the dinner last night. And today he's done a complete 180. He did it at NATO. He disses our NATO allies, goes in there, threatens to pull out of NATO, threatens all kinds of shit, right? And then as it ends, he said, oh, they're closer. We're closer than we've ever been. It's more cordial, more... the man is a... No. What's his name? Not McMaster. He's gone. Mattis and the military is having to make it up, like to mend fences with our NATO allies to clean up his mess. Oh my God! On to the subject of immigration. In the Sun interview, Trump lambasted Europe's immigration policies, and he doubled down on it. In let me find the right clip. Did I not have the clip here? Uh-oh, hold on. I got to find the right clip. I did not pull it over to my wall here. It is, bear with me, because this is pretty stunning. 13, immigration, here it is. Okay, yeah. I wonder if I have the whole question on here.
I just think...
No. The reporter, it was a reporter, I believe, from the BBC who said, asked him, you said in that Sun interview that European immigration damaged the cultural fabric of Europe. What do you mean by that? And here's how he answered.
I just think it's changing the culture. I think it's a very negative thing for Europe. I think it's very negative. I think having... in Germany, and I have a great relationship with Angela.
Yeah, sure you do.
Merkel. Great
right.
relationship of
right.
Germany. But I think that's very much hurt Germany. I think it's very much hurt other parts of Europe.
What?
And I know it's politically not necessarily correct to say that, but I'll say it, and I'll say it loud. And I think they better watch themselves, because you are changing culture. You are changing a lot of things. You're changing security. Look at what's happening. I mean, you take a look. I mean, look at what's happening to different countries that never had difficulty, never had problems. It's a very sad situation. It's very unfortunate. But I do not think it's good for Europe, and I don't think it's good for our country. We're, as you know, far superior to anything that's
Excuse
happened before.
Me?
But we have very bad immigration laws. And we're doing incredibly well, considering the fact that we virtually don't have immigration laws. We have laws that are so bad, I don't even call them laws.
Oh my
I call
God.
Them, it's just like you just walk across the border. You walk across the border, you would put one foot on the land, and now you're tied up in a lawsuit for 5 years. It's the craziest thing anyone's ever seen.
No, you're the craziest thing anyone's ever seen. The man is certifiable. He has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. He just rambles on. Words come out of his mouth that don't mean anything. And he's embarrassing this nation on the world stage. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. All right. I'm not going to burden you with more of his clips. I mean, I could. There's so much more. I'm going to play one more. This again, he's acting like he knows how anything works on the world stage. This is more of the Sun interview on May's plan, Theresa May's plan for Brexit.
If they do a deal like that, it will most likely, because we'll be dealing with the European Union instead of dealing with the UK. So it will probably kill the deal with. If they do that, their trade deal with the U.S. will probably not be made. Now, if they do that, I would say that would probably end a major trade relationship with the United States.
Big man. He talks an ugly game behind world leaders' backs. But then when he's in front of them, he kisses their asses, just like he wants them to kiss his ass. It's sickening. Trump's itinerary while in Great Britain had him avoid London. You know why? Because there were massive protests against the president taking place, including the flight over Parliament of that huge blimp depicting Trump as a screaming baby holding a cell phone. But even though he didn't, they avoided it. They had him helicoptering around instead of traveling in a motorcade. It was all to have him avoid the protests. But the blimp apparently still made an impact. As Trump told The Sun,
I used to love London as a city. I haven't been there in a long time, but when they make you feel unwelcome, why would I stay there? I guess when they put out blimps to make me feel unwelcome, no reason for me to go to London.
That's all right. I think all those Londoners got their message across loud and clear. Meanwhile, here at home, FBI agent Peter Strzok, the lead agent on FBI probes into Hillary Clinton and the Trump campaign, and who was ousted after texts he sent to a colleague critical of Trump were uncovered, was in the hot seat on Capitol Hill for almost 10 hours yesterday, testifying before the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees combined. After a particularly testy line of questioning from Republican Trey Gowdy and accusations that the FBI was biased against Trump during the campaign, Strzok launched into a forceful defense of the FBI. Now, I know this clip has been played over and over again, but, you know, here's the thing first of all, Peter Strzok is so well spoken. The fact that he did this off the cuff, unrehearsed, I don't believe it was rehearsed, and everything he said was so spot on, it begs to be played again. So let's listen patriotically.
Sure, I think it's important when you look at those texts that you understand the context in which they were made and the things that were going on across America. In terms of the text that we will stop it, you need to understand that was written late at night, off the cuff, and it was in response to a series of events that included then-candidate Trump insulting the immigrant family of a fallen war hero. And my presumption, based on that horrible, disgusting behavior, that the American population would not elect somebody demonstrating that behavior to be president of the United States. It was in no way, unequivocally, any suggestion that me, the FBI, would take any action whatsoever to improperly impact the electoral process for any candidate. So I take great offense and I take great disagreement to your assertion of what that was or wasn't. As to the 100 million to one, that was clearly a statement made in jest and using hyperbole. I, of course, recognize that millions of Americans were likely to vote for candidate Trump.
Unbelievably.
I acknowledge that is absolutely their right. That is what makes our democracy such a vibrant process that it is. But to suggest somehow that we can parse down the words of shorthand textual conversations like there's some contract for a car is simply not consistent with my or most people's use of text messaging. I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, at no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took. Furthermore,
you go.
This isn't just me sitting here telling you. You don't have to take my word for it. At every step, at every investigative decision, there are multiple layers of people above me, the assistant director, executive assistant director, deputy director, and director of the FBI, and multiple layers of people below me, section chiefs, supervisors, unit chiefs, case agents, and analysts, all of whom were involved in all of these decisions. They would not tolerate any improper behavior in me any more than I would tolerate it in them. That is who we are as the FBI. And the suggestion that I, in some dark chamber somewhere in the FBI, would somehow cast aside all of these procedures, all of these safeguards, and somehow be able to do this is astounding to me. It simply couldn't happen. And the proposition that that is going on, that it might occur anywhere in the FBI, deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
Good for him. Every time I've heard this at least a half a dozen times now, because they were playing it on the news all over last night, because it was just so perfect. What a spectacle this hearing was. It was ugly and contentious from the start. Trent Gowdy is a miserable piece of shit. And he asked the very first question, and which he knew that Strzok couldn't answer. I've lost my all right, here's this first question that got well, you'll hear how ugly it got.
Between July 31st and August 8th, how many interviews did you conduct related to the alleged collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign?
Congressman, as you know, counsel for the FBI, based on the special counsel's equities, has instructed me not to answer questions about the ongoing investigation.
I'm asking for a number.
Russian attempts to interfere.
Agent Strzok, I'm asking for a number. I haven't gotten to the names.
What a dick.
How many people had you interviewed between the beginning of it on July 31st and August the 8th? It's an eight-day time period. We're a week into an investigation. How many people had you interviewed?
Congressman, I understand your question. I appreciate it, and I would very much like to answer. But as I've stated, as you know, that counsel of the FBI, based on the special counsel's equities, have directed me not to answer any questions about the ongoing investigation into Russian attempts to interfere.
The gentleman will suspend, and the clock will suspend. Mr. Strzok, you are under subpoena and are required answer the question. Are you objecting to the question? If so, please state your objection.
Mr. Chairman, I object.
The gentleman does not have standing to object. There is no
point of order.
No point of order here. The
point of order should be heard.
The gentleman will state his point of order.
My point of order is that intentionally or otherwise, this demand puts Mr. Strzok in an impossible position. He is still an employee of the FBI, and FBI counsel has instructed him not to answer the question.
So it goes on like that. It went on like that for almost 90 minutes. They couldn't get through the first question because they were demanding that he answer a question that the counsel to the FBI said he couldn't answer because it's part of an ongoing investigation. They threatened him, not only, what's his name, Malfoy, with the hair. what's his name? Gowdy. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee, whatever his name is. It's Friday. I'm so brain dead from all this stuff. They threatened him with contempt because he wouldn't answer the question that he wasn't told by the FBI counsel not to answer anything part of an ongoing investigation. So it went on like that. For a while. Some of the questioning was simply absurd, like this from Congressman Gosar. I'm not sure where Goodlatte. Thank you, Trumantown. Goodlatte is the chair of the Republican chair of the House Judiciary Committee. Gosar, G-O-S-A-R. I'm not sure what state he's from, but he had one of the more absurd lines of the day.
You used your political belief in black and white in a text message. We've established that in my previous question running up to it. So you said about a bias. This morning I watched. By the way, I'm a dentist. Okay, so I read body language very, very well.
What?
And I watched you comment and actions with Mr. Gowdy. You got very angry in regards to the Gold Star father.
As he should. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm a dentist, so I know body language very well. Yes, I mean, there are times I thought we were in an alternate universe. There's always batshit crazy Louis Gohmert. Louis Gohmert, goober from Texas. Here's Louis Gohmert, who pissed everybody off.
There is the disgrace.
And it won't be recaptured anytime soon because of the damage you've done to the justice system. And what, I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness
is always an issue. Mr. Chairman,
this is intolerable harassment of the witness.
What's wrong with that? You need your medication.
You need your medication. Yes, Louis Gohmert certainly needs his medication. Yeah, it descended into shit like that constantly. The Democrats' questions were of a different sort. One of my favorite lines of questioning was from Jamie Raskin. I don't have the whole thing, but you'll hear the first couple of questions he asks. He was armed with quite a number of these, but we'll start here.
August 8th, 2016, Senator Marco Rubio said Donald Trump was, quote, unworthy of being our president. Was this attack part of a deep state conspiracy that you organized?
No.
In October of 2016, Speaker Paul Ryan said, I am not going to defend Donald Trump, not now, not in the future. Was this fleeting outburst of moral courage part of a deep state conspiracy that you organized?
No.
Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called Donald Trump a moron. Former EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt said he's an empty vessel when it comes to the Constitution. Steve Bannon said he's like an 11-year-old child. General H.R. McMaster referred to Donald Trump reportedly as a dope and an idiot with the intelligence of a kindergartner. Karl Rove called him a complete idiot.
Yep.
Representative Duncan Hunter said he's an a-hole, but he's our a-hole. And the director of the National Economic Council, Gary Cohn, reportedly sent out an email describing Trump as an idiot surrounded by clowns. Were
Sounds
all
right.
of these vituperative negative characterizations of Donald Trump part of a deep state GOP conspiracy engineered by you and your friends?
No.
Were any of these statements part of a conspiracy you organized?
No.
Now, although this conspiracy does appear to be overwhelmingly Republican, if it exists, balance compels me to ask you about my hero, Bruce Springsteen. Mm. Unlike the others who are all Republican, Springsteen's a Democrat, and he said, the Republic is under siege by a moron. Did you tell him to say that?
No.
Was it part of a deep state conspiracy to criticize the president?
No.
Mr. Strzok, this hearing has been a circus and a kangaroo court run in banana Republican fashion.
Ooh, good one.
And I believe that some of my colleagues have disgraced themselves today in their attack on the FBI and the justice system of America. How can we recover from the hole that has been dug here today?
Good question.
Sir, America is strong. I have, however bad I think I've seen it in my life, I am confident that the institutions, the American people will endure and be great. I have full faith in the United States, all the men and women, and I, even in times of trial and tribulation, I have every confidence that we will emerge as great as we've ever been. And that
well, I'm with you, and thank you for your service to America.
I wish I had that faith. Congressman Jerry Connolly of Virginia went down a similar line, although he kept pronouncing Strzok's name incorrectly. I'll give him that just because his questions were so good.
The following email. Character matters. Real Donald Trump is obviously not going to win, but he can still make an honorable move, step aside, and let someone else try. Did you write that email?
I don't believe I did.
No, you didn't. Republican Senator Ben Sasse wrote that email.
Sasse.
Another
Ben
unforgivable
Sasse,
sin. Okay. He should be here as well, apparently. My wife, Julia, and I, we have a 15-year-old daughter. Do you think I can look her in the eye and tell her that I endorse Donald Trump? When he acts like this and his apology, that was no apology. That was an apology for getting caught. I can't tell the good people of my state that I endorsed a person who acts like this. Was that you, Mr. Strozek?
No, sir.
No, it Strzok. Wasn't. It was Republican Jason Chaffetz, former chairman of my committee. Did you write the following? For the good of the country and to give the Republicans a chance of defeating Hillary Clinton, Mr. Trump should step aside. His defeat at this point seems almost certain. And 4 years of Hillary Clinton is not what's best for this country. Mr. Trump should put the country first and do the right thing. That's you, certainly, right?
No, sir.
No, you're right. It was Republican member of Congress Mike Kaufman from Colorado. In light of these comments, Donald Trump should step aside and allow our party to replace him with Mike Pence or another appropriate nominee I cannot in good conscience vote for Donald Trump, and I would never vote for Hillary Clinton. That's yours.
No, sir.
No. That's Republican Barbara Comstock of our home state of Virginia. All right, well, here's another one. It's now clear Donald Trump is not fit to be president of the United States and cannot defeat Hillary Clinton. I believe he should step aside and allow Governor Pence to lead the Republican ticket. You wrote that one.
No, sir.
You didn't? No, you're right. That's Republican Bradley Byrne of Alabama.
Ooh.
Well, how about this one? Donald Trump's behavior makes him unacceptable as a candidate for president, and I won't vote for him. As disappointed as I've been with his antics throughout this campaign, I thought supporting the nominee was the best thing for our country and our party. Now it's abundantly clear that the best thing for our country and our party is for Trump to step aside and allow responsible, respectable Republicans to lead the ticket. You wrote that one.
No, sir.
Oh, no. That was Republican Martha Roby of Alabama. Well, how about this one?
And he keeps
going. I respectfully ask that you, Mr. Trump, with all due respect, step aside. Step down. Allow someone else to carry the banner of principles. You wrote that one.
No, sir.
No, you're right again. That was Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah. So it sounds like when you were writing these emails in the heat of the campaign, you had a lot of good company on the Republican side of the aisle.
Sounds like he did. Yeah. We need to keep reminding, especially now in this election year, all those congressmen who are up for re-election who want to be hanging on Dump's coattails, remind their constituents of what they said during the campaign about him. I could keep going. We could keep going for the rest of the hour, but instead, we have Gaius Publius coming on in just a moment. But before we get that, let me just wrap up what's news with one last thing. We have something to look forward to this weekend because Showtime is premiering a new show called Who is America with Sacha Baron Cohen. Now, hopefully you're familiar with Sacha Baron Cohen. He's the Ali G show. And this new show, Who is America, sounds like he has characters along the lines of Ali G doing interviews with politicians. And some of the politicians we know that he got for this new show include Judge Roy Moore, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Sarah Palin, who is angry. She is pissed off that she was had. And Dick Cheney, who's seen in a teaser signing a waterboard kit. I can't wait because we could all use some laughs right about now. All right. So I'm going to change gears here and get our friend Gaius Publius on the line because, you know, we talk to Gaius Publius a lot on the show. He blogs at a number of places, including Down with Tyranny. And we usually talk about articles that he has up at Down with Tyranny that are always worth reading. But I was alerted to an op-ed that was in the San Francisco Chronicle on July 3rd. And the title of this op-ed was The Next U.S. Constitution is Forming Now. And it was written by... it says by Thomas Neuberger, but when you scroll down to the bottom, it says Thomas Neuberger is an essayist, poet, and storyteller. He has published political analysis under the pen name Gaius Publius since 2010. So, let's wait no longer.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Gaius Publius.
Oh! Another winner!
Joins Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Oh, hello, Gaius Publius.
Hello. Actually, I've given a lot of thought to that introduction.
Yes.
And Howie Klein has, I think, the answer, and I want to pass it on to you.
Yeah.
Thomas Neuberger is the pen name, and Gaius Publius is actually the real name.
Ah, okay. Good to know. All right. Well, yeah. Now that we've got that straight.
So,
but thank you for featuring the article. I'm very pleased with it.
Well, you should be. You should be very proud of it. So it was in the San Francisco Chronicle on July 3rd, and you know, I thought about reading it, and then I, you know, to the listeners, but then I thought, well, I tweeted it out earlier, and I'll post it on the blog. You know, I'll post a link to it on the blog along with the podcast today. But I'd rather hear you talk about it, because what you're saying is we've been through. You know, most of us think that we have one U.S. Constitution, but you talk about it's gone through a few different, like a few metamorphoses, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah. In fact, a nation's constitution isn't any nation's constitution, isn't just what words say in a document. And in some nations, like Great Britain, there's no written constitution at all. It's this series of practices that people agree to be governed by. And those practices are always in change. Everything changes in the world anyway. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times those practices change drastically and in some cases violently. So if you look at the British Constitution, up to the point of King Charles I, the king presumed himself to be an absolute monarch, and in fact that was very strongly cemented by previous kings, including Henry VIII and Elizabeth I. Well, Parliament decided that they're going to rewrite the Constitution and started exercising a bunch of privileges that led the king to feel to shut down Parliament, that led Parliament to field an army, that led the king to field an army, and that was a constitutional change. After the end of all of that, the Constitution was rewritten, and I use rewritten metaphorically because nothing was set down in writing. Okay. Well, we've been through that process three times ourselves already. The first Constitution is something that came out of the Revolutionary War and the crisis of unity that the nation experienced in as a British colony and attempting not to be a British colony or attempting to have more rights than British colonies had. Some of those were political rights and some of those were economic rights. Out of that grew the Articles of Confederation, which got rewritten, actually revised completely, into what we call the U.S. Constitution. The second Constitution grew out of the violent conflict, the lead up that produced the Civil War and the Civil War itself. Out of that grew the Constitution of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, mm-hmm. which actually turned on its head an awful lot of the prior provisions. Now, you have to say that's not an amended Constitution. In a lot of ways, that's rewritten, and it's fair to call that a new Constitution. In the third case, we've got the Great Depression, in which we didn't go to violence, but we could well have mm-hmm. had Hoover been elected, for example, and troops been called out instead of Eleanor Roosevelt going and feeding people who were marching on Washington and having all these Hoovervilles, which were hotbeds of very lefty thought. I don't mean that as a negative. I just mean it's very lefty thought. This country could have come apart again. And if you think about the New Deal Constitution, mm-hmm. you're talking about a government that has almost reversed the way the nation does business from, say, the Calvin Coolidge era. We're talking about an interventionist economic state. We're talking about a nation in which something we're talking about today, a job guarantee program,
right.
Was in effect. We're talking about a Supreme Court that overturned all of the New Deal up until the point where Roosevelt threatened to pack the court, which is generally written about as a negative. But that should be seen as a positive. There is nothing sacred about nine Supreme Court members. In Europe, many of the Supreme Courts in the European nations have as many as 20 members.
Wow.
And the threat of packing the Supreme Court scared the court to the extent that it started approving rather than rejecting the New Deal reforms. So we've got in place right now a constitution that is essentially the New Deal Constitution with a huge regulatory interventionist state. That's been changing since you could make a couple of starting points there. One of them is the Kennedy assassination, which is kind of a spark. One of them is Johnson's refusal to call Nixon out on actual treachery during the 1968 election. Okay. And then the next one would be Nixon's pardon. If the president does it, it's not wrong.
Right.
And he got away with it because he corruptly, I think, appointed Gerald Ford as his vice president with the, I think, pretty obvious, though never proven, quid pro quo that if you're my vice president, you pardon me if I have to leave. But the real start of this is probably the Reagan-era overturnings of the regulatory state, including the death of unions with PATCO, which, by the way, was the only real union to support Reagan in the 1980 election. And also the Reagan-era overturning by, in essence, executive order, not a little executive order, but by redefinishing the notion of public good, we got rid of all of our monopoly laws. And look at the world we're in today. I just heard today that T-Mobile is thinking of buying Sprint.
Well, how much more?
This is now a new country we're living in. And some of this stuff has been cemented, and some of this stuff is people are really upset about it. And we're building toward a crisis of unity around what's been happening, I'll just say, for the last 30 years. That's going to get resolved one way or another, and we will have a fourth American Constitution. And in fact, that was the original title of the article, the Fourth American Constitution.
Okay, Gaius Publius is with us, and which obviously things have been changing for the last 30 years, a lot for the worse. The problem is, though, now we're in such a horrible situation with a maniac in the White House, and you know, the courts are being packed with ultra right wing conservative ideologues from every level, not just the Supreme Court, which it looks like he's going to get his second nominee through there, but the appeals courts and the federal courts. I mean, the whole time Obama was in the White House, that the Republicans controlled the Senate, they wouldn't allow him to confirm judges. And so there was a buildup. There was a huge dearth of new judges being confirmed. So there were so many openings when Trump took over, and now they're just shoving them in there. This is a really dangerous precedent, isn't it?
What's the this?
The situation that we find ourselves in, where the courts are now being packed by these right-wing ideologues.
The courts have been being packed by right-wing ideologues for the last 30 years. And during the Bush era, one of the chief enablers of packing the courts with right-wing ideologues, the lower courts, was Pat Leahy, who was head of the Judiciary Committee. And in fact, because he was Mr. Congeniality, wouldn't deny the seating of a right-wing judge to an appellate court or a district court, except under the most extreme circumstances. So both parties have been passing through right-wing ideologues to the Supreme Court. There's nothing wrong with saying that Trump is the right-wing on steroids.
Yes.
But it's also has to be said, I mean, how did Trump get elected to begin with? How did Sanders almost get nominated to begin with? It has to be said that this nation is on the verge of having just had it with all of these people, with this, all of these people that hand money to the rich and special rules for the rich. John Corzine, who stole money as the CEO of an investment company, stole from his clients. Couldn't land himself in jail if he tried. Why? He's a big Democratic donor, and he's a Democratic. He's a former Goldman Sachs guy.
He's a
former governor of New Jersey. Right. Yeah. So Obama's not going to throw this guy in jail. Well, you can't get thrown in jail if you're the right person these days, and people have had it with that.
But you know what blows my mind is someone like Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama. He was Alabama, right? He got thrown in jail because the right they have no problem with persecuting and prosecuting Democrats. It seems like it's the Democrats who have trouble, you know, holding the Republicans accountable for their actions. Just like you mentioned, Pat Leahy putting through all these conservative judges. So if we're talking about, you know, changing the Constitution again, I know that there are rumblings of like a constitutional convention, all coming from the right. I mean, they want to change the Constitution, but in a very rightward fashion, which scares the bejesus out of me.
I'm not talking about changing the Constitution.
Okay.
I'm talking about a Constitution that is being changed by the way government is run so that past practice becomes precedent. For example, let's put Bernie Sanders in the White House
Please.
In 2017.
It works for me.
Yes, yippee. And let's say he directs his Justice Department to start putting bankers in jail for fraud for the mortgage crisis.
Oh, yes.
How many New York bankers would be in jail? And how many people who are in both parties in the establishment would say, that's not fair. This is how we've been doing it. You're changing the way we've been doing it under a bipartisan consensus that we don't jail bankers because XYZ. Collateral damage to institutions that hire plenty of workers in New York City. I mean, the reasons will be whatever they are. But the fact is that you will overturn the way we do business in this country. That will be seen as a revolutionary act. That will change the Constitution. And that's nothing that's been enacted by law. A job guarantee program that Stephanie Kelton and others have been talking about will change the Constitution. It will force private industry to compete with government for workers, where government sets a de facto standard where this is the minimum wage and this is the minimum benefits. And if you're offering less, I will offer a job to a worker who quits you and wants to come work for me. People will go nuts about that in the top 10% and the top 1%. So that would change the Constitution. It would change the way we practice government. And we're in the middle of that kind of change. We just haven't decided which way we're going to go yet. I will admit that Trump is a problem. I will never admit that Trump is the only problem, and he's only a part of this larger problem. And we need to be talking about this larger problem, or we won't get out of it.
Right. Well, there is a much larger problem, and it allowed Trump to get into the White House in the first place. But what I see as the larger problem is it's all this stuff coming down, and I put it all on the right, and I blame the Democrats for not protecting us against it. All the voter suppression nonsense. I mean, the voter suppression stuff, the Voting Rights Act back, it wasn't too many years ago, it was reconfirmed. It was like 99-1 or something. And now they want to kill the Voting Rights Act. Now they're doing everything they can to overturn it. They've made such a big bigoted turnaround in such a relatively short period of time. It seems like the Democrats never saw it coming. They just got ran over.
There's no question that there is a radical right agenda that is as extreme as anyone imagines it to be. Actually, it's more extreme than anyone imagines it to be. Part of the radical right agenda is to overturn the regulatory state. There is a way that the Supreme Court could dismantle all regulation by the executive branch. There's a Supreme Court precedent that could be starting to be cited by these radical right judges. So I don't diminish in any way those concerns. But there's also a neoliberal agenda. And that neoliberal agenda is what got us here. Mm-hmm. So to return to the neoliberal agenda is not a solution. In fact, somebody tweeted today, it might have been Glenn Greenwald, but it may have been David Sirota, who knows? Mm-hmm. I don't recall that the problem with focusing so much on Trump is that Democrats haven't been reconfigured to be the solution yet.
Right, right.
And to eliminate Trump and stick us back with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, who says, by the way, that impeachment's off the table.
Of course.
For Trump, if she becomes Speaker. That doesn't solve the problem. That eliminates one army from a field in which we're battling two armies. We still have to battle that other army. And if we're not successful, the country's going to change. And if we don't end up with a Washington or an FDR, mm-hmm. we're going to end up with, for the first time in our history, something worse after crisis than we had before.
Okay, so then that leads me to the next question. Who are the Lincolns, Washingtons, and FDRs out there waiting? Because I haven't found them. I mean, I think Bernie Sanders is, but I think that he was so damaged by the 2016 election, by Hillary Clinton, and the divides in the Democratic Party, that I don't think he's viable. I think Elizabeth Warren could be, but I other than the two of them, I don't see anybody who is that, you know, knight in shining armor who's going to be able to turn things around. Do you?
Well, I have several, but let me ask a question first, yeah. Nicole. You make an interesting point. If it were Bernie Sanders, let's say a Sanders-Warren ticket mm-hmm. versus and a Trump-Pence ticket uh-huh. in 2020, uh-huh. Who do you think would win?
I have to say Sanders-Warren. I have to say it, although it scares me because of the dirty pool played by the Republicans, because of the gerrymandering and the voter suppression and the voter purge lists and Kris Kobach and, you know, cross-check and all the dirty pool they play. I think the momentum would be with Sanders-Warren. But I think that the Democrats would have to come out in two and three times greater numbers than the Republicans to pull it off.
And who's more likely to bring out those numbers, Sanders or somebody like Cory Booker?
Oh, Sanders without
somebody,
a doubt.
Somebody like Eric Holder?
Oh, without a doubt, Sanders.
So we can't and maybe you're saying this and I'm not hearing it, but we can't allow the fact that Republicans – play as dirty as anybody plays, keep us from nominating our strongest and mm-hmm. most viable candidate.
Right.
Now, as to the who's in that, I think the thing that Sanders has uniquely, and even Elizabeth Warren has only partly, is I don't think there's anybody who doesn't believe that Bernie Sanders means what he says.
Mm-hmm.
That there's just a history of integrity there. Even if you don't like it, he means what he says. Alan Grayson has a lot of respect for Louis Gohmert.
Yeah.
Not because Louis Gohmert isn't crazy, but Louis Gohmert isn't conniving. He actually believes this stuff. And you can actually respect somebody who believes that stuff.
I mean, I
get where Louis Gohmert is coming from when he says, Do you kiss your wife with the same lying mouth that you're yeah. kissing the Congress, basically, or this committee? You know, that's a good question. And he believes that stuff. I don't know that it's a valid question, mm-hmm. but it's coming from sincerity. So who has that kind of sincerity?
Well,
I think a lot of people see Warren as having that kind of sincerity, mm-hmm. but on a narrower mm-hmm. set of issues than Sanders has. I think that somebody like Zether Teachout, for
uh-huh.
example,
yeah.
has absolutely unimpeachable sincerity
yeah.
as an attribute and will probably continue to have it. There are people like that coming out. I mean, Teachout is not ready for a presidential nomination.
No, but hopefully she becomes the Attorney General of New York.
And Ocasio-Cortez is not ready for the Senate, perhaps. Maybe she should at least have one round in the
House,
Congress.
Right?
But people like that are impressive, not because they seem impressive, but because they have that undercore of being what they are.
Right.
When there's a false step. Sherrod Brown, for example, I question a number of his votes.
Yes.
I have some questions about Jeff Merkley. I think he'd be mainly good, but Merkley has thrown me with some of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've never been thrown by Sanders, where he says one thing and does something else.
Right.
He does
no,
the
I
opposite.
Agree with you.
I have been thrown by Merkley occasionally uh-huh. about that. I have been thrown by Sherrod Brown about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thrown by these other people who might be considered candidates in 2020, and I think that's going to be critical. I don't think that the overwhelming number of new voters that it's going to take to swamp an election in 2020, despite Republican dirty tricks, are going to be brought out by a politician that has some good history and some questionable history and looks kind of suspicious. I think it's going to have to take an Obama in 08, even though we were betrayed in 09, or a Sanders in 16, or a Trump in 16 to do it.
Right.
People who come across as, I can inspire you, I can make you want to make the change that really needs to happen, and come on out and vote for me.
Well, I think, and I think on that level, Bernie, yes, can do it. The problem is the party, the Democrats, again, the best ever at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. They know how to take a winning thing and turn it into a giant loser. They sabotage.
Turn that upside down.
Okay.
We say winning and losing because we think they're on our side, mainstream Democrats.
No,
they're
not.
Actually winning.
They're winning by promoting Republican politicians and ideas.
They're winning by making sure that no progressive enters the inner chamber of the Democratic Party.
That's right.
They'd rather control the party than control the country. They'd rather lose to Sanders, lose to Republicans than lose to Sanders.
Yes.
And they show that every day. And if you talk to Howie every day, every week as you do, you see
we
that
do,
all
every
the time.
Thursday. Right.
So I don't think they're hapless and losing. I think they're winning. They're just playing a different game than we think they're playing. Sorry, I interrupted. I apologize.
No, that's fine. It's fine. No, this is what it's about. It's the give and take. I worry that we could have momentum going with, by God, a Sanders-Warren ticket would be my ultimate, fantasy right now. I would love to see that. And I think they'd be great, and they'd be great for the country. But I don't think the Democratic Party would allow it, just like they didn't allow Bernie Sanders to be the nominee in 2016.
Yes, I agree, which makes the Democratic Party enablers of the Trump regime.
Yes. Well, which is why, it's a good time to, push this again. Our only way out of the Trump mess right now in the short term is to get out and vote Democratic in November. And, I know a lot of people they've had it with the Democratic Party. There was the big Dem exit simply because of what the party did to Bernie Sanders. But now is the time to get involved. Go to your local Democratic club meeting. Get involved on the local level with your party and change it from the inside. Because there's not going to be a third party solution to Donald Trump in 2020. There's not going to be a third party solution to Donald Trump in 2018. The only way to put some kind of check on his power, the ridiculous, awesome power that he has assumed, is to have the Democrats take control of one or both chambers of Congress, preferably both.
Yes, I will say yes to that, with the addendum that the only way to make the Democratic candidate viable is to wrest control of the party from its current leadership.
That's right.
Otherwise, we don't have a viable Democratic Party.
And the only way to do that
is... I'm preaching to the choir because I know that everybody who's listening to this agrees with that.
Of course. But I also think that most people listening right now don't go to the local Democratic Club meetings, and I think that's got to change. Look, I don't, but I'm going to change that. In fact, tonight, let me tell you, for people who are in South Florida, if you're in the Fort Lauderdale area, there is a meeting tonight. It's a general joint meeting of Progressive Democrats of America, Broward County chapter, Our Revolution, and the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida Broward group. And they're meeting at the Grind Coffee Project on Southwest 2nd Avenue in Fort Lauderdale. Starting at 6:30, or I think 6:30 is when people start getting there, and 7 is when the meeting actually begins. This is the time we need to come together and figure out how to win, because the alternative is just too scary to think about, frankly.
And I'll just add that the antidote for depression is action.
Yeah, Well, and so that's why I'm taking action, because I'm thoroughly depressed.
I had you in mind when I said I didn't say it lightly. I mean it seriously. When people start acting, they don't sit depressed. They feel they're engaged, and that's a healthy thing. That's healthy for the body and healthy for the mind.
And you know, if you're like me and you're a fighter, get in there and fight back against the Democrats who are going to, but Bernie's not a Democrat. Well, you know what? He's exactly what we need right now. And stop with, at this point, that's semantics. He votes with the Democrats. He caucuses with the Democrats. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, by that same reasoning, is not a Democrat either. But Democratic Socialists, they caucus with the Democrats. And they're what we need right now. They're the ones encouraging people. They're the ones motivating young people to get out and get active. And that's what it's going to take if everything is riding on November.
To take this back to where we started.
Yes.
We need a progressive revolution in this country. Otherwise, we're going to either cement the neoliberal order till it breaks or have the extreme right-wing revolution that's going to break things even faster.
Oh, boy. Gaius Publius, again, his op-ed in the San Francisco Chronicle was entitled The Next U.S. Constitution is Forming Now. I already tweeted it out, so it's on my Facebook page. It's on my Twitter. I will post it on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. Gaius Publius, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for writing this. It was a great piece.
You're welcome. Thank you for featuring it. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you Tuesday.